Hello, friends. Kyle Tierman here, and welcome to another episode of my podcast. Thank you for your time and attention. Thank you for your ears. And thank you to everyone who's been tuning in over the years. I do not take it for granted. Before we get into this episode, which I will do shortly, I need to offer a couple caveats and disclaimers. First, this episode is not for everyone. Dane very bravely and very honestly recounts some trauma that he has experienced in his life. So if you feel like this may be damaging for you to listen to, I recommend that you stop now. Just skip to the next episode. Also, the names of some of the victims involved in this trauma have been removed for the privacy of the families. Dane Anderson is a buddy of mine. For those of you who don't know, he is a professional surfer from Carmel, California, one of the smoothest styles in the whole region, and he is known for taking cold water trips to far-flung places in the globe, usually with a 5'4 hooded wetsuit, booties, and gloves. All right, we're going to get right into this episode, and feel free to reach out to Dane if you have anything to say to him as he is on a road to recovery. Please welcome to the podcast, Dane Anderson.
Kyle Tierman here. I'm in Cape Town.
I was the only journalist in northern Nigeria.
Not an adventure until you get lost in Tijuana.
You get caught inside by a giant wave, you feel really alone.
I love the adventure of waking up and not knowing what will happen and that being my job.
I'm standing at a desert oasis right now.
A lot of tourists don't see this part about Bali.
Smiles and thumbs up.
Talking. Test. Dane Anderson in the house. Thanks for doing this, man.
Of course, Kyle. Thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
I'm stoked you're here. And you're living in Santa Cruz right now.
Yeah, I'm living in Santa Cruz. I actually moved up here almost 2 years ago now to go to Fleahab.
Okay.
That prompted the move. Big life change.
And what is Fleahab?
Fleahab is an addiction recovery house. It's a pretty cool environment. It's just a house. You have to be sober living, essentially. And run by Flea, Daryl Verosco.
One of the great Santa Cruz surfers, three-time Mavericks champion.
Yep, legend.
Yes, we grew up on all the Flea videos. Did you grow up on those movies?
Of course, the Kill videos.
The Kill, TK4. Yeah. Did you ever see State of Emergency?
That movie was one of my favorites.
State of Emergency was amazing. These are like old VHS tapes that we would throw in and just watch hundreds of times.
I don't think my State of Emergency VHS works anymore. I've watched it so many times.
Really? Yeah. You know, my dad has... he's a filmmaker, and growing up, he had a VHS copy machine.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure we would rent movies from Blockbuster, and then he would copy them, and then we'd have them forever. Super illegal. But we did that with all the surf movies, too.
Epic.
So I think that I might be like one of the last owners of a lot of old Santa Cruz surf movies. Like, there's a super old one by photographer filmmaker named Tony Roberts.
Yeah,
not Tony
name.
Robbins. Tony Roberts. Two different guys.
Tony Roberts, a legend.
And he made one called Surfskate. Do you ever see Surfskate?
I never saw that.
Surfskate was like pre TK4, pre State of Emergency. Like, this is, I think, like late 80s, early 90s. And he made one kind of before Dave Nelson came up. And it's cool, dude. They really captured a generation of Santa Cruz surfing that was very special at that time.
Yeah, and it's, so just to kind of fast forward, it's been cool to see what Flea's done, and like, you know, there's a lot of drugs and alcohol, and they were absolute psycho savages, those guys.
Yeah.
And just to see like the guys that, like Flea and Peter Mel, that have kind of come out the other side, you know, it's really inspiring to me. And I'd done a lot of treatment before, but it just kind of aligned with, like, I'm a surfer, and like, this is someone I can actually relate to. Mm-hmm. He has this program. Hit him up. I was really struggling. He was like, yeah, we'll see what we can do. See if we can get you in. And it just worked out. Like, there was a room open. It's really hard to get in that house.
Mm. And where is the house?
So the house is on the east side. It's on Lottman Drive, kind of by, like, right off 41st, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Flea is, he's had an interesting life trajectory. I think that from being kind of the focal point of that generation of just going super big, having a time in the late 90s and early 2000s when surfing was as cool as it gets, so there was way more money than anyone needed. You know, I mean, you had like a lot of guys in Santa Cruz getting paid six figures to basically not leave Santa Cruz and just surf, and then get on the cover of Transworld Surf, Surfing Magazine, Surfer Magazine, and then slowly, virtually all of them got addicted to meth.
Yeah,
and some of them, like Flea, were able to recover from that tailspin. But it was really weird growing up as the generation below them, because like my mom moved to the West Side when I was 11 years old, and I remember seeing these guys, and they're heroes. You're like afraid of them, and you want to be like them. And then there's just like this dark side that you kind of know is happening as we got into our teens. Yeah. You kind of hear about it, and then but you don't really know what's up. And then I remember there was that article in Surfer Magazine where I think it was called Coming Clean, and the photo was Flea naked with a bunch of soap all over him.
Yeah,
and
that.
He just talks about the whole thing of winning Mavericks, being on top of the world, getting paid a lot of money to surf, and then spinning out into meth and now recovering and starting Flea Hab.
Yeah, exactly. And you talk about that dark side, right? Like, we all have it in different shades, you know? But for me, I was kind of the same way. Like, I would put this facade on, you know, and just like, I grew up wanting to be a pro surfer ever since I was young. And I was able to kind of do it. Not anything like those guys did,
right.
but I kind of dedicated my life to it. But then I would have this dark side where I would just drink due to trauma. And not really show anyone, you know, like try my best to hide it, you know, and I'm done doing that. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear the story and grateful you're talking about it. So to set the scene a little bit, where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Carmel.
Okay. And Carmel is a little surf town just south of Santa Cruz on the other side of Monterey Bay.
Yep.
There's beach breaks. It's a very small surf community. People, and we were just talking before the podcast, it's like people from Santa Cruz hate outsiders, and then people from Carmel hate outsiders plus people from Santa Cruz. So it's like you kind of whenever you're a dick, you know, a local in Santa Cruz being a dick to outsiders, then you go down to Carmel and kind of get a taste of your own medicine.
Yeah.
That I remember being like, huh, wow. I'm looking at the man in the mirror right now as these guys are splashing me and telling me to get out of their spot.
Yeah, for sure. And when I was growing up, I really looked up to the local pro there, Johnny Kraft.
Mm-hmm. Amazing surfer.
Incredible surfer.
He was always, so he's a few years older than us.
Yep.
And I remember he would always come to Santa Cruz. He just had this super clean style, really developed surfer. Almost like someone you would expect to come out of San Clemente with like incredibly good surfing fundamentals, whereas a lot of Santa Cruz guys had more quirky styles.
Yeah, just an incredible surfer. And watching him kind of navigate the, like, you can't really, you're not supposed to really shoot in our area, and he would go to Santa Cruz and do it. And then I was coming up under him, and I was a little more edgy, and I like kind of didn't care as much. I was like, fuck, it's like perfect tubes, and like I'll shoot these beach breaks that aren't always going to be good, and they're hard to score anyways.
Right.
And I got a lot of shit for it from the local community, like for a long time. But I was just like, you know what, this is what I want to do. And the reason I was so passionate about it, just to kind of dive right into it, when I was 17, I was in a really bad car accident and watched my best friend die. We went off the cliff in Big Sur. And we were kind of coming up together and like surfing, coming up here doing contests. We both all we wanted to do was be pro surfers, surf like Johnny. And that just kind of led me to being a bit more like, after he passed away, I was like committed my life to it. You know, I'm going to do this.
Right.
Like, didn't really know where to put my emotions or feelings.
Right.
So I was a bit dedicated. So that kind of led to me being like, I don't care. Like,
right.
Like, yeah, yeah. I don't care what you have to say.
Right.
Like,
it's hard to become a pro surfer and to not be able to, you know, get photos, and it kind of makes it impossible for what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We were coming up together and we were like, I met him when I was freshman in high school, and he was getting like, we were at the like sparring partners, right? Getting good, coming up here, doing like the little Vulcan contest, kind of like beating some Santa Cruz kids, thinking it was really cool. Just seeing what Johnny was doing and just kind of progressing. And he was like getting better than me when we were like 16. We came up and did a Vulcan contest at the point. And he just did this gnarly frontside hack, he was really powerful. He had like stocky legs, and the announcer was like, "Whoa, who was that?" And for like a kid from Monterey or Carmel to like get any recognition up in Santa Cruz is kind of like, you almost have to surf like better than your
for
than
sure
your best, because like they're pushing you guys.
Yeah.
We all know that.
That was the real reason he wanted to come on the podcast. Just fucking gripe about all those semifinals he lost in when he came up to Santa Cruz. That's the real issue here. I see where you're going. Okay, so
yeah.
And you guys were surf buddies.
Surf buddies. Yeah.
Every day. Pick each other up, go surf.
Yep.
Getting better day after day.
Just eat, sleep, breathe, surfing.
Mm-hmm.
Just
okay.
Watching surf movies, going surfing. Just that's all we cared about.
Right.
No, like from 15 and 16.
Mm. And throughout those formative years of high school, that's really when you develop.
Yep.
And then what actually happened? You guys were, just tell me a story.
Yeah, so it was July 25th, 2006. And it was real small in town. We were like, oh, maybe we'll just go down to Big Sur and see what we can find. We're just going to go to Malera. We didn't really know anything. It was flat. And we being five of us,
mm-hmm.
In F-250, kids are bored, trying to find waves. And we ended up all the way down it. And it was like head high, little wedges off the cliff, had a really good session. And just like, we're just kind of high on life. Like, couldn't believe we'd found waves and like, just we're stoked, you know? And it was an afternoon session and we're driving back, around like 6 PM in the summer. So it was still light out.
Right. And so then Big Sur, for people to know, it's big granite cliffs that drop off low into deep blue water, and a lot of windy roads.
Yep. So very challenging road to drive. Had only had his license for about 5 months, so it wasn't even legal for him to be driving us. He was a really fast, like kind of aggressive driver. I remember on the way down I had to tell him to slow down multiple times. Like, I was scared. But so he's driving, sitting shotgun, I'm sitting back right. We're driving north, so after our session, just having a good time, just like not a care in the world, right? And so this is kind of heavy, actually did rock, paper, scissors for who was going to sit shotgun. I think about that a lot. And it kind of fucks me up. So we're driving north about almost to Lucia. So between Lucia and Pacific Valley. And you kind of, you leave Pacific Valley and then you kind of go up the windy thing. And if you know where that big, like underpass, the big stone thing they built, that wasn't there at the time, but that's just north of there is where we went off. He came around a corner too fast, slid, overcorrected. We flipped, landed upside down, and slid down a pretty steep cliff, like not a sheer drop off. But it was like a pretty steep gradual slide. my head went between my knees because we landed upside down. That broke my back. And we're just sliding down. And it was just a crazy feeling. It just happened, boom, so fast. And I was conscious throughout the whole thing. We're sliding down. I'm like, wow, okay, this is it. I'm going to die. And we kind of launched at the end, like there's like a 10-foot drop off at the bottom, and kind of like went weightless for a bit, and then boom, landed on the beach. And when we landed, the surge of water came in the vehicle, my head's between my knees, and then I went underwater, so I'm essentially drowning. And I remember in that moment, I'm sure you're aware of this, but when you're like dying, your body releases those chemicals, like the DMT. And I felt just the most immense peace I've ever felt. Like I could see my family, my friends, and it was just the most peaceful, amazing feeling you could feel. And I was just like, okay, goodbye. Like, I've lived a good life. Like, love you guys. It was pretty nuts. And I was essentially, because I was drowning. And the water kind of receded out of the vehicle. And then I got a breath. And I was like, whoa, I guess it's not time yet. I was unable to, like, unhook my seatbelt and kind of, like, fell out the door. Kind of, like, it kind of opened. And I got on the beach, and he was sitting next to me, like, I kind of like helped him crawl out, and me and him are just standing on the beach. And the thing that still gets me to this day is listening to the sound of passing away, because the front of the vehicle was all smashed in, and he was just like, it was, yeah, the worst auditory thing you can imagine. And I'm standing on that beach just in shock, not in any pain, just like, I can't, like, how the hell am I even, like, alive? What, like, not thinking really, just like, okay, I'm alive. And the thing that came into my brain was, before we went off, which would never happen today, there was no cars on the road. Not a single soul saw this happen. And I remember knowing that, standing on the beach. If I want to have any chance to help my friends who are in the car survive, I have to climb up this cliff and get help. And it was just like, boom, that's what I have to do. And so I said that, like, we have to go up there. Nobody saw us go off. And he's like, oh, okay, just in shock too. Like, okay. So we actually start climbing up the cliff, just 1 foot in front of the other. I remember we almost fell a couple times. We got halfway up and got ejected out the left door. And he's laying on his back, like, bloody, his arms all messed up. And I'm like, hey, just stay here. Like, we'll get you help. He was conscious, but just like, don't fall asleep. Close your eyes. Just like, stay here. We'll send help. Make it to the top. First car we flag down, the guy's a lifeguard. It's him and his lady. We just, like, we look like fucked up. Like, he didn't have to look twice. He's like, he just gets out of the car and just runs down, like, sprints down. And then the lady gives us, like, goes in her back, gets us blankets. I remember laying down on the pavement on my back. She put the blanket on me and just whoosh, all the pain at once. It was pretty nuts. We went back in an ambulance, ended up getting airlifted passed away of blunt force trauma. I talked to the lifeguard a couple of years later, and he said he was there. He ended up being there with him for his last moments. And he just said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. So, yeah, that was when I was 17.
Wow.
Yeah. The summer before my senior year of high school.
What was it like for you in the weeks and months after that incident?
Just a emotional mess. You know, I was in the hospital for a week. I had like a morphine drip button, and a lot of people came to visit, which was great. But then it just kind of got a little much. And I remember if I just wanted to go to sleep, I could just press the little drip button and be like, awesome, thanks for coming.
Right.
And then I was in a back brace for like the next 5 months. And so I went back to school, and I was like, I would just have to lay flat in all my classes. It was kind of a blur, honestly.
Mm.
Like, just couldn't really process it, you know, for a while.
Did you have anyone that you were talking to about the incident, or what did you just kind of, yeah, how did you attempt to process it?
So I went, like, my parents got me a therapist, so I would go see her, and I remember she was very sweet, and she said, like, you're in like a very special camp now, like, this does not happen to a lot of people. Like, I told her about the death thing, and like, honestly, we didn't really talk that much. Like, I remember I would go in there and like just laid on my back, and she would just be like, you don't have to say anything, and like just kind of have the space. And I think that's all I really needed, because like, it was so heavy. In like the months following, we would all go to our other friend's house and kind of like just meet up and talk.
Do you remember what any of those conversations were like?
I remember just the thing that comes in my head is like one session we had, we would go to our friend Cooper's house, who we were close with as well, just like a grief counseling session, and people made these stickers. Like this one session, we were like, oh, they didn't even know him. And we're just like mad about it. And then we're like, oh, what? Like, we kind of like came to terms with it. We're like, why are we? We're just angry, like, because this happened, you know? But yeah, it was a tough time for sure.
And when, how would you describe your like inner monologue through that time? Was there like a feeling of responsibility, or where, like, what were the stories that you were telling yourself? Do you remember any of those, like just the common ones on loop during that time?
Yeah, the one that I got to was that was on loop was like, okay, I can be sad about this, I can be bummed, or I can, what would want me to do? Is where I got to pretty quickly, honestly. And he would want me to go try and pursue my dreams of being a pro surfer. And that was the loop. And that's what I put all my energy into. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to surf. Like, this, it's...
Try and get as good as you can.
Try and get as good as I can.
Right.
Yeah.
And were you sponsored at the time?
Yeah, I had, like, little flow sponsors.
Okay.
Like, I think I was sponsored by Maddox.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember them.
Yeah.
And then when would you say that the drinking and started? Kind of walk me through that next.
So I went to college.
Mm-hmm. Where?
I went to CSU Channel Islands.
Okay.
Because that's what you do after high school, is really the only reason. I did a college tour with my parents. They're all Californian, and that was pretty funny. We went to like all these colleges. I got out, looked at them, and then we got to CSU Channel Islands. It was the end of the tour. I was burnt out. Didn't even get out of the car. Knew where I was. I was like, okay, you got these beach breaks here. You got Rincon 40 minutes that way. There's Malibu. I'm going here. My mom's like, you don't even want to like check it out?
Yeah,
I'm like, no.
We're just doing
no,
it.
No, I'm going here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up going to CC Channel Islands. New school. I was only like 7 years old, and pretty good decision for my surf career.
Right, because you were just surfing a ton during, yeah, during college.
Cool zone, yeah.
Okay.
I was surfing. Oh, yeah, and back to your question. So I was surfing and drinking, you know, because I didn't know how to deal with my trauma
right
at the end of the day. Like, and I was young enough to where it wasn't really affecting my body. Like, I could drink and party.
Yeah.
And then get up and be fine and go surf, you know.
Ed, did you feel at that time like, I've had grief counselors, I've talked this through, I'm okay?
No, well, deep down, no. I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was numbing feelings I didn't even know I had at that point, you know, and just kind of one-track mind, like, I'm going to surf, and then, like, damn, this is kind of heavy, but, like, not even giving myself the space to even get into that.
Right. So when would those feelings come up? Was there, like, a certain, was it as you'd go to bed or something like that it would all start rushing back in?
Yeah, and it was always around the time of the accident. You know, they say your body stores that trauma, and I would feel it, like, not even, like, physically kind of feel it and be like, okay, I don't want to feel like this, boom, alcohol.
Mm. You know? How would you describe the feeling in your body?
Just a bit heavy and anxiety-ridden. Just, yeah.
Okay. And in college, I mean, that's when a lot of people develop their drinking habits, because it's abnormal not to drink,
yep,
in college. And you're figuring out who you are, and there's parties and girls, and it's just a whole culture. So was there, did you feel like you were, what were your drinking habits like in college?
Normal for college. Which is
right.
But
which,
like,
is like getting blacked out twice a week.
Yeah, yeah. So, like,
yeah, totally normal.
More than that sometimes. And I think that's why I gravitated towards alcohol, because it's, like, socially acceptable.
Right.
You know? And that's, like, the gnarly part about it, you know? It's just as deadly as all, like, if not more than all these other things, because it's socially acceptable. But yeah, I was like, we would drink, like, every night in my dorm room.
My,
like,
older brother's a firefighter, and he told me once, it always stuck with me. He's like, yeah, if alcohol wasn't around, I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah. Straight up. It's so gnarly.
Yeah, the amount of alcohol-related calls he goes on, whether it's a car crash or belligerent drunk, you know, it is a very, it's a gnarly drug.
Yep.
That we've, you know, marketed to a culture to be normal. So you were drinking like everyone else. And would you say that people, like, I remember always there were kids in high school and college time that would tend to get blacked out more. And you're always like, oh, that guy's hectic. And you don't really see where that path is going. It's all, there's a kind of one-upsmanship of, like, who's going to do the gnarlier thing, who's going to get more wasted. And there's usually a guy who's just consistently getting super fucked up. Did you feel like you were that guy?
No, I wasn't that guy, but I could get there. Like, I would always base my drinking around the waves. I was like, if the waves are going to be good, I'm not drinking that much. If the waves are going to be shitty, I'm going to get, like, go hard.
Right.
So I always had that, and that just kind of stuck with me, mm-hmm, right? So that was how I kind of got too good at it.
Right.
Where I was like, I could still stop, mm-hmm, you know? So I was like, okay, I'm not alcoholic. Like, I'm not blacking out every time.
Was anyone worried about you?
In those days, not yet.
So this is like 21, 22.
Yeah, not yet.
So you go to school. Do you get a bachelor's degree?
So I went to school I went there for 2 years, and I was surfing a lot. Didn't really know what I wanted to do. And
still wanted to be a pro surfer.
100%. And I was surfing just as good as a lot of the guys in Ventura,
mm-hmm,
that were my age and had sponsors. And I was like, okay, like, I can do this. And then I got a sponsor. I got sponsored by that company Rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided, okay, I'm kind of don't know what I want to do in college. I'm going to go travel. And I had some money to do that from, like, the settlement from the accident.
Mm.
I got some money. And so me and my two good friends went and did just a whole 6 month trip. We went to New Zealand, Chile, and then Indonesia.
Who was your friend?
It was my buddy Pat Wallace from Monterey.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a big trip.
So did that, and then with the intention of just kind of exploring, and then on that trip, I was like, I want to do the QS.
Okay.
So then just went that route.
And for people who don't know, I mean, the QS is a constant travel grind around the world where you're showing up at contests for a few days, waves might not be so good, and you're trying to do as well as possible. What was your experience at the QS? Did you like it?
Yeah. You like it when you're making heats.
Right.
And it's cool just to like, I was pretty young and just like stoked to be there, mm-hmm. you know? And I was making some heats. The first one I ever did was in Canada, the 6-star cold water, made my first heat. But then just got smoked in my second heat. I think by Eric Geiselman, he did like 3 backflips or something. And I was like, oh, I can just do turns. It was fun to travel. And like, I was honestly just stoked to make a heat. I beat like a CT guy once in France. And mm-hmm. I was just like, okay, like I don't even need to make another heat. Like just so psyched on myself. You know? So I wasn't really like in it to make the tour or anything. Like, just to prove to myself that I could do it, you know, honestly, just like.
Yeah. It seems like you have a healthy relationship with your surfing.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
There's not a lot of self-loathing or grandiosity, which I think is easy to fall into in when you get good at surfing. Like, you're a fucking good surfer, and it's easy when you get good to think, I'm going to be the next Kelly Slater. And you start to develop this weird delusion. And then it's also, I think, easy for good surfers to just, and people who get good at things, to have self-loathing be the engine. And they can't give themselves credit for any successes that they have. And they really miss the whole ride. I would say that I'm more in that camp. Like, that's my unhealthy story. It's just, I fucking hate my surfing. I hate my, you know, like that. And I'm aware of it. And I've worked on it to just be like, you know what? This is a beautiful fucking sport. This is an incredible community. And to be able to see the world through using surfing as a vehicle is a really lucky thing to do. And to even get sponsored and be able to travel to these amazing places is an accomplishment that you should be proud of, that most people don't get to do, and it's the result of a lot of hard work and dedication to this craft. So the way that I'm hearing you talk about it just seems like you have a good kind of relationship with your surfing.
Yeah, it's like you said, such a special thing we have, you know, and it's a lot of times. Probably, I think about like it a lot. I'm like, I don't know. I might not be here if I didn't have surfing.
Mm.
Like, it's so special. So I've always held that part of it. Right, there's a lot of different parts of it.
Might not be here. You mean on the other side of
of
addiction?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I don't think I'd be doing as okay as I am without it. You know, because it's such a healthy outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Just to. Back to your point, like that's kind of why I stopped doing the QS. It became just like going to shitty waves, not doing it for the love of it. Mm-hmm. In the end, after like 6 years of doing it,
right? Yeah. So you from there decided that you're gonna just be more of a photo guy, and
yeah.
Did you move back to Carmel at the time?
I moved back to Carmel. Had to get a real job.
Mm-hmm.
Started working for my parents' physical therapy business in the office, like 3 days a week, not full time. Still just trying to surf whenever I could. My coworker was like, "Are you serious with your schedule?" Like, if there was like fewer patients, I'd be like, "Can I surf this morning?"
Right.
Like, just you know how it goes.
Yeah.
I did that, and then I would just try and save money to go on video trips and like get photos as much as I could. I was shooting, had some cool relationships with photographers and a great filmer, and just started making videos, and I just wanted to go to cold water locations.
Mm-hmm.
And so did like a Canada trip, and then was able to I was on Body Glove at the time, not getting paid, but I was kept doing it, you know, and I was like making these cool videos. I went to West Coast of Canada, went to Nova Scotia, and they're like, okay, like you're producing pretty unique content, like let's get you on.
Yeah,
and
for a wetsuit like, company.
Yeah. So then I got on salary with them, and that was cool. I was able to keep it going and go on those trips and make videos. And
yeah, I was looking at your Instagram today, and it is mostly you in thick hooded wetsuits getting barreled in random locations. I love cold water surf trips. When you know you're going to go to a cold place, it's not as cold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I do know what you mean.
The coldest sessions I've ever had in my life are at Rocky Point in Hawaii.
That's
freezing your ass off. Yeah. But if you know you're going to Ireland, you know you're, and it's going to be freezing, you are mentally gearing up for that shit, and it is toasty.
Yeah, and so like even our last trip to Iceland, the guys were like, "How cold is it going to be? Like, are we going to be?" And you're in such good gear, and you're prepared. You're almost warmer than surfing here. Like we're surfing here with a 4.3 in booties, no gloves, but you're there. You're in a 5.4, gloves, thick boots, and like in the water, you're like pretty warm.
Yeah. Toasty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah. I did a trip to Alaska last year, across the Shumagin Islands and on a boat trip. And we were freezing. Went with my friend, Steve Hawk. He's a writing mentor of mine. He was, the editor at Surfer through the late 90s. And he does this trip every single year.
Nice.
I went with John Rose as well from Waves or Water, super cool guy, and who also actually we did a podcast, and he talked about a trauma that he's had from all of these gnarly disaster zones that he's worked at, and he actually did MDMA assisted psychotherapy.
I would like
that
to,
really
I'm
helped
looking
him.
Into that.
Yeah, you should, man. But yeah, I mean, you just think it's freezing, and then even once you're there, you're like, wait a second, I'm in a frickin' 5mm Patagonia and like thick mittens and big booties, and this is like killer and toasty. And I love doing that stuff, man. I did one of my favorite surf trips ever. I went to Ireland and surfed some of those slabs for a week, and it's just such a special place, and so fewer people.
Yeah, that's the reason I like it, you know. You can score really good waves with nobody around.
Yeah.
Which we did in Iceland. We were there in October.
Mm-hmm.
Went with Jesse Mendez and Hunter Jones, and then Daniel Goristeta, a local photographer from here. And then we got the guy, Aaron Rathy, who is a staff filmer for Body Glove, Canadian.
And what are the waves like? What were the best waves like?
So going to Iceland is sick because you don't even look at the forecast, really.
Mm.
Like, you can try to score as well. It's pretty hard. You just go there with the intention. I don't know. I think the way to do it, I've been there 4 times. You go there, you rent a camper van or a car you can sleep in. You want to be super mobile. You don't want to be staying in one place. And you just are willing to drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big island. It's going to be offshore somewhere. And there's just infinite setups. It's just like so cool to explore. It's freaking beautiful. Even if you don't get waves, you're like driving. You're like, oh my God, a waterfall. Oh, wow, rainbow.
Wow.
And then you like, there's potential to see the northern lights. Just like,
wow. It's, are there reefs there?
There's reefs, slabs, beach breaks.
Wow.
Everything.
Is that
points?
There's a wave on your Instagram, which is a right slab where you kind of take off on a small wave and then it feeds into a bigger barrel.
Oh, that was Scotland.
That's Scotland.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And that's the wave that, like, I think Willem got a cover on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Is that, there's also that movie, Taylor Steele movie where I think Shane Dorian, Mayer go there.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the same zone.
That's the same zone.
Oh, that place looks insane.
You got to go there.
Yeah, that looks really, really fun.
Let's go.
I would love to. So at what point did you know that you knew you had a problem with drinking?
I'd say in my late 20s.
Late 20s.
Yep. I was...
How old are you now?
I'm 34. Yep.
So in your late 20s, you're living in Carmel, surfing, working for your folks. How had the drinking habit progressed?
So I was doing all that, and I was in a relationship, and I would kind of come home every night and like drink a bottle of wine, you know, feel that feeling, and like wasn't really in therapy, not dealing with it. And then it just became a habit and became normal.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of, it's gradual, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just get used to it and it's a habit. And then one day it all kind of came to a head.
Was your girlfriend drinking?
No, she didn't drink.
She didn't drink at all.
No. So, and she just...
Which makes the difference much more stark. There's the drinking couples where then it's just normal, but...
Yeah. And so when I drank, I would like get all emotional and talk to her about my trauma and just be a fucking mess,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then she's like, you need to get help, all this. And like she would try, but she's not equipped for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the funny thing about drinking is it opens you up to talk about stuff, but doesn't heal any of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd think you'd be like, oh, it's so good that you were crying, we hugged it out, and then then you like regress emotionally the next day. It's not like you know, mushrooms or MDMA where you're going back to that place, but you're moving through it. So what happened at the day of the head?
I woke up and I was like just feeling pretty heavy, and I was like, okay, I just need to go surf. I drove down to Big Sur. On the way down, I got passed by like two cop cars with their sirens on, and then a fire truck. I'm like, oh, man, just like super triggered,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I go surf, and I remember it was the only time I've ever like cried in the water, and it was just like I didn't even really know why, and I was just like, what, like, I don't know, what am I doing in life, kind of thing, like what's happening. And I remember I came back up just like I was like an emotional mess, and drove to like the little town of Big Sur, sat down, got some food. And the people at the table, like, next to me were, like... More vehicles with sirens pass. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, come on, like... And I'm just thinking of Ryan and the accident, just on a bad one. And the people next to me are like, oh, yeah, somebody went off the cliff. And I'm just like, cool, this day fucking sucks. Like, I'm on a bad one. Like, I'm gonna go get some alcohol.
Mm.
And so I... went to the store, and like my weapon of choice was hard kombuchas.
Who would have thunk?
Yeah.
Who would have thunk?
So I got some of those, and
like, but your gut biome is so healthy while you're blacking out.
Literally, that's how I justified
it
in my brain.
It can't be bad for me. I'm look at all this good these good microbiomes as I'm getting blacked out.
Exactly. So I went and got some of those. Started drinking on the way home, drinking and driving. And it's like I just think about it. I'm like, really, like. It just makes no sense for me to do. Like, zero sense.
It happens so often.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. I remember there was a funeral a friend of mine went to where the guy had died in a drunk driving accident, and they had a keg at the funeral.
That's wild. Yeah.
And my friend was just like, it was the most tragic comedy. And people are in pain, so they're getting wasted at the funeral.
Yeah.
And then driving.
Yeah, and that's how it goes. It's nuts.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't make sense.
Right.
And I know it doesn't make sense, and then I still do it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's crazy.
So you're drinking, driving.
Yep. Drove home, got home. I was living with my girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
she was like making dinner, and I was like hiding it, right? Like mm-hmm. hiding that I was even drinking.
Yeah.
And then she would like be in the kitchen, and I would like go drink more.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like on a bad one, like, but like trying also to pretend I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I didn't want to like ruin her like good little night. And so I'm like, I'm going to go on a walk. And so I walk. I was living in Monterey at the time, and it was like 5 minutes to the gas station. Walk to go get more alcohol. And there's like these paramedics on the side, and I'm like kind of like pretty drunk and just like just feeling it and just like in so much pain. And I like go up to him, and I'm like, just say some stupid stuff. And the guy's like, hey, leave us alone. And I'm like, what? Well, I'm just being an idiot. And the cops get called, and the like two cops come, and one's like, they're playing like good cop, bad cop. And one's like, are you okay? What's going on? And the other one's like gets in my face, and I was just being, I don't really remember all of it because I was kind of drunk. And long story short, they cuff me. The other cop gets in my face, and I'm cuffed, and he's like, we're gonna put you in the drunk tank. And he like says something like really triggering and got in my face, like really close to me, and I headbutted him. Not a good call.
Not a good move.
And he's like, oh, well, you were just gonna go to the drunk tank, now you're going to county. And I'm like, sick, I don't even fucking care, I want to be dead, like I'm over this. Like, so yeah, I spent the night in jail. And I was like during COVID, spent the night in the county jail in Salinas, and just in this little cell with like 20 other dudes, and they're using the masks they gave them for like over their eyes to sleep.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And I was super scared. It was absolutely terrifying.
Was it your first time going to jail?
First time going to jail, yeah. And it was a huge wake up call.
Mm.
You know? Would not recommend. 0 out of 10.
0 out of 10 on Yelp. Salinas County Jail gets a 0 out of 10 yeah. on Yelp. Eye masks sucked.
Yeah.
So what in that wake up call did you, in the days after, I'm guessing your parents knew, your girlfriend knew,
yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Yep.
Did you decide then and there, okay, I'm going to go to rehab?
No.
Okay.
I was like, oh, it was kind of whatever, one off, like mm-hmm. kept drinking.
Yeah.
And then it was during COVID, and I like had my van at the time, and let's see. Oh, I just wanted to get out of the house. Was reorganizing it and like outside of the house, like drinking a couple beers, pulled out from where I was like kind of reorganizing it over in like Seaside, and a cop lit me up, gave me DUI.
Oh God.
And I blew like 0.2 over, but still got it. Back to jail, straight to jail. And then parents had intervention, sent me to a 45-day intensive rehab in Arizona.
Okay.
Didn't want to go. Didn't want to be there.
Mm.
Couldn't really be honest with myself.
Mm.
I was like,
didn't think you had a problem.
Knew I had a little bit of a problem, but like thought I could handle it.
Right.
And that's just gonna, I don't know, it's gotten me into trouble, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. When you would get drunk, would you get in fights?
No.
So that was kind of new for you.
Yeah.
So we all know people who get drunk and they just, I mean, they just try and fucking headbutt everyone after the fourth beer.
Yeah.
But you didn't feel like that was you.
No, I didn't.
It was more just that yeah. you had the pain of the day
yeah.
all spun out.
Yeah, just not pretty.
And would you do other drugs when you get drunk?
No.
That wasn't,
I don't smoke weed.
But you weren't like the get drunk and let's find an eight ball guy?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you went to that rehab and didn't want to go. And how long did you stay sober? Or, I mean, what was that experience like for you?
It was, I just had wished that my parents would have like just talked to me and said, let's find some treatment for you. Mm-hmm. And I would have been open to it. I think maybe not. So they feel bad about it because they think it could have been a better experience.
But they kind of sent you off. They're like, yeah, you can't work at our spot anymore. And we're sending you off.
Yeah. Well, it was a full intervention. They were there. My best friends were there because I would like drink and then call people.
Mm.
And then that's never good.
Mm.
So everybody kind of
knew. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was reaching out for fucking help, honestly.
Right.
So,
right.
And yeah, that was an interesting experience. Good parts and bad parts. A lot of, I tell you, like a lot of to meditate, you mm-hmm. know, you had a therapist, you're in groups, you're rewriting, played a lot of pickleball. Mm-hmm. yeah, it was interesting. I think if I went like now and I was ready to fully like immerse myself, it would be helpful.
Okay.
And it helped a lot of people that were there.
Sure.
But the whole time I was there, I was just...
You didn't want to be there.
Didn't want to be there. You know, and my therapist said that. She's like, you don't want to be here. You're not going to get shit out of this. Why are you here?
Right.
Why don't you leave? And I'm like, well, because it'd make my parents and my friends feel better.
Right. But you knew that you were going to come back to drinking afterwards.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned writing. Had you had any kind of journaling practice throughout your life?
Yeah. So... writing was one of my favorite things and my best subjects in school. I liked to write, and I would write a lot of stuff down. I have like, and especially when I was drunk, and go and read it and be like, that's kind of what made me know I have a problem. You know, I was like, I'm writing this shit and this is how I feel. And like, this is wild. I can't even like formulate my thoughts properly. Mm. You know, like I got to deal with this stuff.
Right. Yeah. I've found writing to be immensely helpful for my mental health. It feels like you can vomit out emotions onto a page and it physically feel lighter after a journaling session.
Absolutely.
So you knew that you were going to come back to drinking and then you felt lost kind of in life generally, not really sure what you wanted to do, not sure if like...
Yeah. It's just, yeah, exactly. Kind of felt lost. Still knew I wanted to surf. The drinking was like ruining all my relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know, as it does. And so that relationship with that girl of 7 years ended.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into another relationship. And in the beginning, we were like drinking together. And I was like, oh, this is what I was missing. I just needed somebody.
I just needed a girl to drink with.
And then like after 3 months, she was like, this is not what I want to do. Like, this isn't healthy. She's really cool and had like strong boundaries. And she was like, you need to like broke up with me. And she's like, if you want to date me, you got to be sober for 6 months.
Mm.
And I was like, all right, sick. I could do that. And so that's when I went to Fleahab.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just at that point, I knew I had a problem. Like, I was just like, I made the decision on my own. I was like, I got to freaking do something, mm-hmm. you know?
So you went to Fleahab, and it's, how long was that program?
You can stay at the house for a year.
Okay.
I stayed there for like 8 months, and I had like 7 months of strong sobriety, and I was surfing good, feeling great, and like pretty stoked on the program. And it's just, that house is cool because you have accountability,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like, it's just guys like me,
mm-hmm.
just need that accountability, you know? And it's it just almost feels like a surf house and everyone's sober and it just works really good. It's cool.
Right.
It's a cool experience for sure.
And you have a way to get that energy out and get those endorphins and then have different routines at night and build in those different habits.
Yeah.
Did you feel ever like you had withdrawals from alcohol?
Yeah, but not any serious ones.
Right.
I wasn't like the type of drinker who would wake up and drink vodka all day.
Right.
So, but yeah, for sure.
Which, you know, makes it easier to not get help because you can always say, well, I'm not like that guy.
So my therapist that I was seeing recently said, you know what? I wish you were worse.
Right.
because that then it'd be easier.
Sure, sure. No, there's, I mean, there's real truth to that, yeah, right? You're like, it's not a big problem, especially culturally speaking.
Yeah.
When you go to a party and you say, oh, I'm not drinking, people are like, oh, interesting. Hey, you want a beer? Like, you know, you're talking about going to a Cold War Classic party the other night. If you're not drinking, you better have something in your hand.
Yep.
You know, and yep. So there is...
Soda water, baby.
Yeah. soda water, lime, and bitters.
Yep.
That's my drink of choice.
Same.
I do think that there is a real... There's these gradients in between completely spinning out and fulfilling your potential.
100%.
And often you're not at 0% or 100%. You're just living at 40% of exactly who you can be. And I mean, I don't know if you know this, but I've done 2 years of no alcohol.
Yeah, I do. That's awesome.
You know, during COVID, I went through a breakup and also realized that drinking alcohol was basically the only times that I would get sick. And we didn't know what COVID was. And I was like, I'm not getting this shit. So part of it was like, I'm sad and I don't want to get sick. So I just committed to doing a year of no alcohol. And I did this. There's this thing called the anti-charity, where you write a check for a significant sum of money to a charity that you hate. So I did it to this. There's a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council that's basically a corporate bill mill. Like, they go into small communities and do things like make plastic bag bans illegal. They essentially do the worst environmental bidding of the worst corporate polluters in the world so that they can you know, pollute to great extent with no consequences. And I fucking hate them. So I wrote a check for a grand to the American Legislative Exchange Council and put it on my wall and said, if I drink alcohol anytime over the next year, I need to mail this check to them.
Awesome.
And I told a friend, I was like, you need to be the bearer of this check. And if I drink, you need to send it off. So I did that through COVID and found, you know, I think I never had any of those like reckoning moments with alcohol, but I have found that I'm prone to depression and alcohol triggers that depression.
Yep.
Even if I have a few drinks and can be fully functioning the next day, doing this podcast with you, going surfing, the big thing that I finally came to that changed were my thoughts.
Yeah.
Even if to the outside world, I mean, the people close to me can kind of tell, like, oh, Kyle's in a weird mood today. But inside my brain, my inner monologue, my hungover inner monologue was a completely different story. Like, I was talking about the self-loathing and just like these stories of really vicious thought loops would be on repeat all day long. And it only took a couple drinks for me to do that. So it was this weird space that I've been in too, where I'm like, I don't have a problem, but I just know that I'm at a lower decibel, a lower energetic decibel than I could be at. And to do what I want to do in life, it actually takes me, it requires me being at a high level cognitively and energetically. And just, it came to this point where I was like, I just want to enjoy more days.
Yeah.
Like, we only get so many days in life, and how many of them are you going to spend with a shitty inner monologue? So that was really what came for me. And I then took another year. I went back to drinking a little bit, and then I decided to take another year off. And did it with a group. I kind of just did an Instagram post and was like, hey, anyone who wants to do another year of no alcohol? And we got like 60 people in this group message.
Awesome.
It was fucking cool. And that year finished, and now I'll have a beer here and there, but I really feel like I've broken that habit in a way where it's a lot easier for me to just not drink.
Nice, dude. Good job.
So for you, did you, you've now been sober for how long?
6 days.
6 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell,
exactly.
6 days you've been sober. Okay, yeah. So you're in it, man.
I'm starting
this conversation, I kind of thought that you were a few years sober. So
no.
Now, okay, so we're deep in the trenches together. Let's get through this.
Yeah, I'm battling, and I'm just like,
okay.
Now when I drink, I have such a different relationship to it.
Okay.
That I hide it so much more.
Right.
And it's,
yeah, there's a lot of shame around it.
Yeah, I know it's not the right thing to do.
Okay.
And I've been able to create a much better relationship with myself,
mm-hmm.
around it, you know, and I know that if to nurture that relationship was what I have to do.
Okay.
And sometimes my trauma just gets a little heavy and I get
weak.
So you went
to Fleahab for how many, for 7 months?
Yeah, 8 months.
8 months.
Yeah, yeah.
And then have you, and then when was that? Recently?
Yeah, I moved out of there last February 2023.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And last time you drank, did you get drunk? What was the...
I drank like 6 hard kombuchas.
Okay.
So, right? So I can like, I'm such a... It's hard for me to kind of, I don't know, be like, I'm a full-blown, like, I need to stop drinking all your coffee.
Oh, shit. Oops. It's all good.
You're good. So, yeah, just going back to what my therapist said, he's like, I wish you were worse. And I found a good therapist, an addiction recovery therapist. Mm-hmm. We saw each other for 3 months. And I would see him, and he's like, you need to be completely sober before we can work on your trauma.
Mm-hmm.
He wants me to go to like an IOP program, intensive outpatient, and like have a lot of support, have a clinician, and stay sober before I can work on my trauma. It's a financial thing for me. I have shitty insurance. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to take it day by day. And so, yeah, the last time I drank, it wasn't a blackout or like I woke up, but the reason I want to stop is literally just what you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be able to reach my full potential if I keep doing this,
mm-hmm.
and keep making these excuses and live like this. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I've tasted it. I know I got to deal with my trauma and go through it. And that requires staying sober.
Mm-hmm.
And fuck, it's not easy.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I'm not a addiction or mental health professional.
You sure?
It could have fooled me. But is there anything that anyone listening to this, you know, going into this podcast, I kind of thought that you were out on the other side of it. And now that knowing that you're still in this, I want to support you as best I can. And is there anything that the community, you know, if there's people in Santa Cruz or people listening to this who kind of relate to this, is there anything that they can do to support you?
Yeah, I mean, you can always give me a call. That'd be great. And then also just there's this thing I've been doing recently called surf therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a therapist. She partnered with the surf school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been helping. So if you're out there and you need support, you do therapy on the beach,
mm-hmm.
and then you go and surf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been pretty cool. I just wanted to get out there. But yeah, I've been thinking about, I saw your latest Instagram post about your friend who was like, how do I root for you?
Mm.
You know?
Right.
And I was been thinking about that this morning a lot. And I really don't know the answer to it, you know? Just maybe give me a hug.
Okay.
Because... In reality, it has to come from me and from within, and I got to figure it out. And I think the reason I want to do this podcast is like to be supportive to anyone out there who is struggling, because it's a journey.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
And I am like, I don't want people to worry about me. Maybe that's how they can support me. Don't necessarily so much be like, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm figuring it out. Like,
right.
I'm going through it. I'm better than I was a year ago.
Yeah.
I'm better than I was yesterday, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Well, I think it's really brave of you to share the story. And I think that there are a lot of people who are going through exactly what you're going through. And it's important to not, I don't know, otherize people who are going through that kind of issue. And I think that we all have our, while you also don't want to normalize it, everyone is going through their struggle silently, whether it's drugs, alcohol, anger issues, depression. And I think that, you know, I've talked to a lot of people on this podcast who have gone through something similar to you. And I hope that you know that, you know, our society is really set up to create lonely, addicted people. And whether it's the fact that there's alcohol on every corner or that we live on our devices and don't feel supported by community anymore. But there are also really incredible organizations and therapies that can change your brain for the better. You know, when I talked to John Rose on this podcast, he was he had similar very, very intense trauma that he thought he had moved through, but didn't. And he did MDMA assisted psychotherapy, which is now being fast tracked by the FDA to as a breakthrough therapy. And it really is, you know, it's a, I would describe it as a completely different experience than just taking MDMA at a festival. Yeah. And the reason for that is that MDMA during that time, during a therapy session, it ramps up activity in your hippocampus, which is where the memory center of your brain, while basically blanketing it with oxytocin, which is a feeling of deep okayness and love. So what's happening to people's brains when they're using this therapy is they'll remember the trauma often better than they ever could before, but they're doing it from a vantage point of love and okayness, and it will move that memory from a place of having this trigger response of your amygdala going off and feeling a lot of cortisol and that kind of feeling of not okayness that you have to a place of, oh, that's something that happened in the past, but I'm not going to get the same physical sensation that is difficult and painful to feel and makes you want to numb it out with alcohol. So, yeah. I mean, I would love to support you with doing so. I think that could be something that is really useful. And I just know a lot of people who have done that and have gotten really great benefits from it.
That's cool that you're saying that, because I've looked into it and I really want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's
appreciate
good,
that,
it's good
that
to
resource.
Know that there are tools out there. What's next for you? What are the next kind of steps and plan? What's the plan?
So, I'm gonna get a prescription for naltrexone, which is just to like, it's a pill you can take and like you can't drink on it.
Mm-hmm.
My therapist was saying, so if you take it, it's a beta blocker.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you drink alcohol, you don't even feel the euphoric effects.
Mm.
And he was pretty funny. He's like, I've done it.
Mm.
You just get all the physical effects, like you feel dizzy and
yeah.
But so I have that. I'm just taking it day by day, and I want to hopefully get into an IOP program. I'm going to shoot for next calendar year so that I can do it with my deductible. My goal is to just make it through December sober. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm moving to a new place on December 1st, changing my environment. Mm-hmm. That's important. Just started seeing a new girl. She's awesome, super supportive. And just really like has been helping me so far. Just keep reaching out, just keep moving forward. Doing this surf therapy thing is pretty fresh, and I could see myself doing it for a long time. It's like every time I do it, I wish I could do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
that's helped a lot. Just keep freaking trying and not giving up and just taking it day by day and
yeah,
moving forward, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And giving myself grace. Like I'm a lot better than when I started, I'm a lot better than I was, you know?
And yeah.
Not trying not to be too hard on myself. Like I got a lot of good stuff in my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And just grateful to have this platform and be able to just kind of share with people that it's okay to be not okay sometimes, and life's hard. And even if your struggle is an alcohol, you know, everybody's got their struggle, and it's freaking okay to talk about it and ask for help, and it'll help you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, more than you know. And people, before doing this, I have these self-doubting thoughts, like, who's going to care? Why would they want to listen to me, you know? And I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me. I don't know where I was going with that. But, yeah, just be nice to yourself and reach out. Yeah. It works.
Yeah. How does it feel to do this podcast?
Good. I was pretty nervous before and just, like, feel better about it. I think there's some good stuff in there that, and like we were talking about before, throughout my recovery, there's just been random snippets of things that I needed to hear at that time that have helped me through, that I've held on to, you know? So if you're in recovery and trying to go through stuff, like you never know where you're going to find it. Mm-hmm. Just keep looking.
Yeah.
Just never stop searching. It relates to surfing.
Right.
Yeah. Highly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hey, man, I really appreciate how candid you've been and just how open and honest, and you're a great storyteller, and you're a smart guy, and you, I think that you have what it takes, and it is something that, as you say, is life is just day by day. Yeah. You know, like, it's you really, people say you need to take life day by day, but that's really the only way that you can take it. And I felt like you showed up really well on this podcast, and you told great stories with a lot of honesty. And you should be really proud of yourself for doing that. And it was an honor to be able to hold the space. So thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate you for having me.
Where can people reach out to you? What's your Instagram?
It's Danish Anderson on Instagram. And then if you're interested in the Surf Therapy Santa Cruz, it's just surftherapysantacruz.com.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, I appreciate you, brother. That was awesome. Thank you.
That's our show. Before you head off into your day, you can go to tierman.substack.com to get my newsletter, my articles, thoughts, ramblings. If you want to hear more from me, tierman.substack.com is the place to be. That's it for now. Thank you so much for tuning in. Get out in the water, whatever body of water is closest to you, lake, river, bathtub, or ocean. I promise it will make your day better. See you soon.